Welcome, everybody. It's the latest episode of Eurobash. What are we on, 48 or 47
now?
I don't even know anymore. There's so many of them.
Who's counting?
You know, we had a big old event there. Well, I mean, a big event in terms of the first event in Uruguay over the weekend. And let's be honest, Valentina Shevchenko.
She didn't even introduce herself.
Didn't even have to break a sweat there.
Yeah, I know she didn't, but you didn't introduce yourself to start the show. Disgraceful.
Well, my name's Peter Carroll. No, your name's Noel McGrath.
That is true.
But everybody knows what my name is.
All right, okay.
Everybody.
Everyone.
But, yeah. How are you? Did you enjoy the fights the weekend?
I did. I went through them. Wasn't a great invested interest in the card. But, I don't think we're going to spend too much time today. I think it was a pretty straightforward run through for Valentina Shevchenko. And,
do you know what?
Mike Perry's nose was probably the standout incident of it all.
Yes, it was.
Crazy sick.
It is actually episode number 48. I just found out there. But what I was kind of taken aback by there is usually when you go to a place and it's the first event in a country, the atmosphere is usually crazy. I didn't really pick up an insane atmosphere from Uruguay, did you?
No, and I think the reason we're going to get that more and more is because the UFC don't promote their cards very
often. What this is? Is it?
Well, come on, let's not beat around the bush, Carl. We don't do it for the last 10 years, so we're not going to do it now, are we?
It's just the kind of week-to-week situation where they're only arriving on the week of the fight, so it's like, all right, we have 4 days.
I just don't understand the model sometimes, and I often talk about this, and I've talked about it for many a year, in terms of why the UFC actually do this, and they don't have less cards and build them up more, put more hype behind them. They're creating more stars if they do that, in a terms of a marketing sense for their brand, and maybe starve the consumer a little bit of the product. Because just like, listen, man, we all know, and I think we all accept it. You know, fans are way more selective now in what fight cards they're going to watch. And I know, you know, if I was a casual fan, obviously I'm not, I'm a hardcore fucking gobshite like you. We have to watch all the cards. And sometimes you're just like, oh God, just give us a fucking weekend off. Like, do you know what I mean?
Do you ever notice when it is like, that, when they leave a gap of a week. We're chomping at the bit. Like, by the time the next UFC card comes, we're like,
I wouldn't go a week. Yeah, maybe we are. But like, that's not the general consensus.
No. But I'm just saying it does add to the kind of allure of the event if you do give it a bit of space. Like next week we have Diaz and it feels like that's just kind of sprung up today, you know, like really.
That's sad because that, like, you know, and I listened to that interview with Nate Diaz there this
Brett
morning.
Brett Okamoto's interview.
Brett and ESPN, yeah, you know, really interesting stuff from Nate. And, you know, I feel very much the UFC played that card all wrong. He was a pay-per-view star after he fought Conor. He was, you know, he was getting serious amount of traction and they just let it fizzle out by not sort of treating him right.
Yeah, no, we couldn't agree more. And I mean, it's been the case of the Diaz brothers since day
crazy.
One. But let's have a look at the news because we'll get back to Uruguay. And of course, we'll be talking about UFC 241 later on. So here's the headlines. Obviously, Shevchenko defends her title in a pretty one-sided main event against Liz Carmouche. That was the big event of the weekend. Cage Warriors unplugged. The bantamweight lineup has been released by yours truly. Scott Malone will take on Jack Cartwright in one semi-final, and then Josh Reed will take on Marko Kovacevic in the other semi-final. Very, very nice bracket there, I have to say. Also on that unplugged card, it's the return of Joe McColgan to the Cage Warriors banner.
Fat Joe.
And he's taken on a French striking machine, that Mehdi Benlakhdar, who is an absolute savage.
Congratulations to Joe, he got engaged.
Oh yes, congratulations, good sir. I can finally, let Elaine watch his fights again. My missus has a bit of thing for Joe, so These things happen in MMA.
The posh Nordy fighter.
Yeah. Craig Voigt v. Lewis Glisman is also on that card, as well as Tom Means versus Decky McAleenan. And of course, hot prospect out of Ireland, Ian Garry, will make a second professional outing when he takes on Martin Harris. That's a good step up for Ian as well. 4-5. And if you've looked at Martin Harris's record, he's only lost to really good fighters. Like really, really, really good fighters. So,
well, I think that's the kind of guy Chris is in terms of what
No easy fights here.
Yeah,
that's not an easy fight. One bit, man. That's a tough, tough fight. And very excited to see Ian again. Obviously, he had that heartbreak there at Cage Warriors 106 when his fight was cancelled at the 11th hour. But he still managed to make it a big event for himself, regardless of that. So that's always a good sign. Bellator Dublin also has another fight. Very interesting one here. Two champions under different banners. Blaine O'Driscoll will take on Jake Hadley. Jake Hadley, obviously, EFC flyweight champion. And Blaine O'Driscoll is the WWFC flyweight champion.
WWE there,
what? What happened? So they're going to be going at it at Bellator Dublin. Also, Bellator Milan, we have Oliver Encamp taking on Giorgio Petrini. That is the co-main event of the Paramount portion of the card, I believe. And Galore Bofondo v. Stefano Paterno, who I think is an unbelievable prospect fighting out of Italy, obviously a former Cage Warriors champion as well. They're going to be the co-main event of the Channel 5 card. I really like those fights, I have to say. Really, really nice for the Milan card as well. But also announced, Aspen Ladd will look to bounce back from her first career loss when she takes on Yana Kunzakaya in December. And then just before we got on here today, excuse me, Newsome MMA tweeted that Mark Diakese will take on Lando Venata at UFC Copenhagen. That's a pretty good card, pretty good fight to add to that card.
It's knockout written all over it right there. Two stand-up guys like to stand down and trade. Very interesting scrap, for absolutely. Lando and Mark, both them.
Yeah, so that's the roundup of the news. I probably missed a few bits and pieces. I was at a wedding this weekend, unfortunately. It was a fantastic wedding, by
the way.
But it's just wedding season, guys. What do you want from us? We have to kind of tune out for a couple of hours every weekend for the next couple. But some talking points there just over the weekend, Noel, and we love our talking points. The UFC, as we said last week, has said that Masvidal won't get the next shot. Masvidal then does an interview with our beautiful Guilherme Cruz, and he says he will fight Leon, but it's going to happen on his terms. The main takeaway there for me is that it's going to happen.
Yeah, once he starts talking, that means he's putting it out there that he's interested.
He has Leon in his crosshairs now, 100%.
Exactly, and he's probably had a conversation with Colby. Colby is obviously going to get the next title shot against Kamaru Usman.
UFC already made a mistake by not putting on Woodley v. Colby when they should have.
Yeah.
So they need to go ahead and do that
exactly.
fight with Usman.
And I think they will. They owe it to Colby as well, title shot, in my opinion. Regardless of what you think of the guy in terms of fighting, he is number one contender, you know, bottom line, periods, whatever you want to say. But yeah, listen, once he's come out and started talking about that, he knows he's not getting the title shot. He knows Covington's getting the title shot. So he needs to start selling something. And I think, you know, they're going to rewind this and go back to London. They're going to play that Laura Sanko interview where, you know, Masvidal walked over to Edwards and gave him a few smacks in the head. Because they missed a boat the first time, and the UFC often, when they missed a boat, they try and make up. And I think it's the only logical fight for Jorge Masvidal and Leon Edwards, and Leon Turley deserves it. I don't know where he's got this. It's on his terms. Why should it be on his terms?
He has to say something. I'm happy
enough
with that.
Yeah.
But like, one thing I will say is, if they are doing, you know, I know there's so many people clamoring to get on the card already, but if they're going to do Usman v. Colby at MSG, why not put on Masvidal and Leon on that main card as well?
That'd
be great.
Why not?
Obviously, we'll have to sit well with Jorge Masvidal before they can make that fight.
Yeah, but like, you know,
I think that's a great fight, like great, great banner fight for those guys. And then to be fresh in the viewers' minds with the title fight happening later on, I think it's perfect.
And they haven't done as well, you know. International Fight Week, the card was okay. It was all right.
It came and went.
I think they need to make up something to New York as well, because, like, you know,
it's meant to be one of their marquee events.
Yeah, and
so let's make it a marquee
event.
They
need to, like, last year was okay. Obviously, GSP and Bisping, you know, two fighters who, you know, one of them's obviously retired.
That
one
was
of them,
actually really cool, to be fair.
We don't know. Yeah, no, it was a good card. I'm not saying that. It was a very, very good card. But I think they need to start doing this with New York and really smacking the interest lines and reselling it there.
With the Trumps there in New York,
exactly.
Everything, it's perfect, I believe.
Absolutely perfect.
Another thing I saw Amy Kaplan of Fansided tweeting about, I think it was last night or this morning, is Choi Lewis Parry potentially signing for the UFC. That's come out of complete left field for me.
I thought he was still with Bellator, is he not?
No, I mean, he fought in the UAE, I believe, recently and got an 8-second knockout. But it's just, like, I don't know. I just, like, I can remember when he was fighting with Bellator over here, was it Bama or whoever. Like, he fought Lucas and Prapoyek, and I wasn't bowled over by him. I think every time I've watched him fight, he's fought to a decision against a guy who he was meant to, you know, on paper, everybody kind of had, like, he's going to destroy him, etc.
Well, even with a lot of the UFC signings, I know he was obviously a big name coming into mixed martial arts, but what you're looking at with the UFC is there's a whole load of host of guys that, you know, people don't really even talk about a lot of signings anymore. Guys just show up on a fight card, and they're not getting much publicity.
So Choi is probably a way more high status than those guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. So they're bringing him in in terms of that. But again,
I'm unsure about the skill set, I must say. Like, I mean, will he be able to? Like, I certainly believe he'll be able to compete in the heavyweight division in general.
Yeah.
But like, will he have it in the top 15?
No,
I don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah,
you don't know, because the thing with the heavyweight division, we always talk about it, is, you know, outside those top sort of three guys, it's all sort of smacking around. It's all sort of, what's the word we use?
Like,
gauge.
Loose change jangling around in your pocket.
That's what it is. Like, one guy could win three fights, like Derek Lewis, be a contender, get his title shot, then lose three in a row. And it's that sort of, there's no real benchmark outside the top three they're all sort of gatekeepers. You could be, you know, fifth 1 week, 13th the next week. It's very, very, very tight. So you can go into the UFC and make a push, three-fight win, and you're looking at a title shot.
Absolutely, absolutely. Final bit there, just talking point. Paddy Hoolan will be releasing a book next month. So congratulations to the counsellor.
I just had Paddy Pimblett in my head for a minute.
No, his book is coming much later.
Jesus.
But yeah, so that's going to be interesting. A lot of people seem to be excited about it. So congratulations to Paddy and Chelsea and baby Seamus. All good news there. How does that guy fit all this stuff into his life at the moment? I don't know how the fuck you can possibly be writing a book, being a counsellor, running a gym.
Don't know, man. Don't know.
I'm doing the podcast. Yeah. Jeez, he has a lot of plates to spin at the moment.
He does. Fair play to him.
The man himself. But look, let's get on with our first interview of the day. Noel caught up with Darren Till. You see, Noel only pulls it out when it's the big lads, you know. Oh, you do week in, week out, Peter. When we need the big guy.
Took long enough to get Tilly on board.
No, Jesus. Way. Till?
Nah.
Till not answering his phone?
2 weeks. Till not replying to text messages.
Sounds about right, to be honest.
Yeah, it does.
But great to speak to Darren. I'm sure it was. I haven't had the pleasure in a long time. But yeah, we'll be back in about 15 and we'll talk to yous about different shite then.
It's been a while since we've had this man on the show, but great to have him back on. We haven't heard from him in quite some time. Back on Eurobash, it is Darren Till. Darren, how are you, my friend? How's all with you? How are you keeping?
Yes, I'm very well, mate. So I'm happy. I'm in a... just left the gym, so I'm happy because I'm going to get some food.
Food, we'll get to that in a minute about what your future's going to hold for you. Obviously, there's talk of you going to 185, so we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes' time. But obviously, there's a few things been going on in your life after that fight, after that loss to Jorge Masvidal, the second loss of your career on the bounce. How are you mentally? How's everything going?
Mate, I always knew I was going to lose. I'd be telling a lie if I said that my second loss didn't, you know, really hurt me. It did, but it's just a part of the grueling and vicious fight game we're in. So, you know, I just have to come back from that. And I'm sure ahead in my long career I've got, there'll be more losses, more ups and downs. And yeah. I'm fully prepared for all. I just want to get better, as I've always wanted to get better. And like, just... train hard and you know, just I want to be the best, mate. And that doesn't necessarily mean 10 fights down the line. The best for me is my next fight and showing the best type of me, you know, and win or lose. Just that's what I've been doing, mate. I'm just you know, I've suffered them two losses in my career. It's, you know, 26. I wouldn't say it's too bad. 17-2, mate. It's not a bad record. You know, but obviously they've been on the bounce. But that's just a part of the fight game, mate. You just have to crack on with it, and that's what I have done. I'm just training now, you know. And
yeah.
I've got a fucking really strong mindset, mate. So, you know, I crack on with things.
Definitely, Darren. We spoke in Dublin literally a few days before the Woodley fight was announced. That's going back a bit. But you even sort of said to me then, you weren't really expecting the title shot next. And you did get that title shot a few days later. But did the UFC maybe push you a little bit too soon? Did they push you too fast?
No, I don't believe so. Because I believe when I look at the fight with Woodley, you know, a lot of people were saying going in that it was striker versus wrestling. Yeah, maybe it was, but Woodley couldn't take me down. Yeah. He didn't take me down. He tried. And he's at his most strongest in the first round. He tried and he never took me down. He knocked me down. You know, he counter-attacked my attack. And knocked me down and then submitted me. That was the thing. But when I look back at it, I know I can beat Woodley. I know I've got the skill set right now to beat him. And, you know, the Masvidal fight, yeah. But first round, second round, I was beating Masvidal up quite easily as well. It wasn't a one-sided fight. Masvidal caught me with a beautiful shot and he won the fight. But listen, two fights, it's not like there's any excuses for me. On that night, them two guys were simply just better than me. And I can accept that. I'm not a guy who's going to sit here and whine and moan and whinge about because my ankle was sore or because the weight cut affected me. No, on that night, them two guys were just simply better than me. And that's just the way it is.
Was there, you know, another thing we talked about in the build-up to that fight was your mindset. You were very respectful to Jorge Masvidal. Is that something maybe...
Yeah, of course.
Is that something maybe... you'll change going forward? Because I think you're one of these guys that you need to really dislike your opponent in order to get your full ability out. Is that fair to say?
No, what was funny about the Masvidal fight as well is I was very respectful, but also when I came out to fight, I was very angry fighting, and that's not me. I'm a very calm, collected fighter, like a technician. So that was a crazy twist of things. But no, I'm easy. You know, I do like the smack talk and that, but I don't mind being respectful, and especially to a guy like Masvidal. I've got a lot of respect for him. You know, he's a true fighter game.
Yeah.
But, you know, simply, the guy just won. There's no problem with my mind or problem with my skill set. He was just a better guy on the night. That's just how I'm slicing it and dicing it.
Why were you so angry, though?
Just wanted to prove something from my last fight, because I never showcased anything against Woodley, because I just, like, sort of was waiting to attack and then got attacked, you know what I mean? It was like, so I just went out there maybe with a little bit more to prove, which, you know, you live and you learn.
What was the reflection period after that, though, with yourself and Colin Herron, obviously your coach? Did you, you know, get down on yourself for a while? You know, did it take long to get over it?
Yeah, I just felt sorry for myself, you know, as you do. And it's just, you know, it took me a few weeks to be like, oh, come on, Dad, and pull yourself together. And, you know, that's, as I say, mate, a lot of fighters would be like, no, it didn't affect me, this, that, the other. But, yeah, of course it affected me. It's a fight game. None of us want to lose, especially getting knocked out. I've never been knocked out before. So, yeah, it hurt. It hurt heavily, heavily hurt.
And obviously being a dad again, is that a good distraction? Having, you know, Zara there to something to do, to take your mind off things?
She's a 24-hour distraction, that girl, mate. She's great, mate, honestly. She's a little dad, and I absolutely adore her. And she's just like, her and my other one, they're just my world. They truly are, mate.
Definitely.
Big distractions, though.
I'd imagine so. All right, Darren, let's move it on a little bit. Obviously, the weight issue. I want to get your thoughts on that going forward. Obviously, 170, it's a tough, tough wave cut for you. It's a process to get down there. You've mentioned 185 on Twitter and on Instagram, something that you may be looking at going ahead and doing in the future. What is the process now going forward, and what division you're going to fight in the UFC?
I haven't thought about it like much. I've thought, you know, yeah, let's do well, let's do a middle, let's do welter, let's do fucking heavyweight, mate, because at the end of the day, I really, really am not scared of any man. But, you know, as I said, right now, the only thing I'm doing is cracking on with my training. I'm training very hard, you know, and I've started a few extra things, you know. I'm implementing a lot of swimming into my game, and I've been lifting a little bit of weight. So, and I'm, you know, I'm putting on a bit of size, and, you know, trying to clean up the nutrition while there's no fight camp. I mean, you know, a lot of guys, they've always said, like, you know, fight camp started. For me, Colin's always, like, put this in our head, like, train all year round, evolve to get better. And I sort of lost that a bit, you know. Last year, maybe I was only training for fights, when I've never, ever been like that. Listen, I only started MMA when I was 18. I haven't really been doing MMA a hell of a long time, like a lot of other these guys, since they were kids. And, you know, I've progressed fast. I've got to the highest level you can possibly get in MMA. That's because I've always wanted to just evolve. And right now, the only thing I'm doing in my life is taking care of my kids and evolving. They're just them two things.
Maybe has there been one or two distractions outside of the octagon that come with a little bit of fame? I know you don't look at yourself as a famous guy, but you are in the public spotlight. You're a famous fighter. Has there been things maybe that, you know, you got involved in, maybe you didn't want to, like, partying and going out and things like that? Has that been a distraction?
No, mate, I've always partied since I was 12 years of age. Let's get that straight right now. I love a good party. But no, it's the only thing that's changed is that, yeah, when I go out now, wherever it be, not even in Liverpool. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, I was in Dublin the other weekend. Mate,
you were, yeah.
You know, it was unbelievable, the support from fans there. You know, I was in Canada in a small remote village. People were noticing me. I was in everywhere, Milan, Amsterdam, everywhere. It's just like, it's a worldwide thing now. Mate, yeah, I do want to clarify, I do not consider myself famous or celebrity. Leave that to the reality TV stars. I'm a fighter, a very well-known fighter. And, you know, there's a lot of things that comes with that, responsibility and stuff like that. So, you know, you've got to stay out of trouble. You know, I've always been in and out of trouble my whole life. And as I always try to say, you know, mistakes happen, and it's ups and downs in this life. And I'm sure I'll make many more mistakes. I think we make mistakes up until we die. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles, pal.
Yeah, has that been a struggle, though, no?
No, not really. No. It's just
adjusting
to that. The only struggle I'd say, I just need to ring off. Sorry, Niall, I'll just drop an hour.
No worries,
friend off. The only struggle is, you know, you do sort of have to control your circle more and say no to certain things because, yeah, as you say, mate, if you like to put it that way, the fame can get a hold of you a bit and the money and you can get a little bit distracted, which I have been and you've just got to ride that wave and that balance and find what's good for you. And lucky for me, mate, I've got so many good people around me, management, coach,
yeah,
and friends. And you just have to find that balance and find the right circle for you.
Well, then saying that, you know, you talking about 185, you've said it is the most likely option probably going forward. Is it good maybe to have a fresh slate, a fresh challenge at 185?
It's just good to fight, mate. It's just good to fight all these top-level guys, whether they be in the welterweight division or the middleweight or wherever. There's not one slouch inside that UFC octagon, you know, who fights. Like, they're all top level fighters. So, you know, for me, it's not about a fresh start. It's just about fighting these unbelievable guys and, you know, being one of them unbelievable guys and getting all these challenges, you know, every fight until the day I retire, which is going to be 35.
Yeah. You said that's going to be the day you're going to call it a day. It's quite a while
that's
away.
Day,
it's, you know,
yeah.
It is. It's quite a while
it's
away.
Nine years.
Considering you're so young, exactly. I think people often forget how young Darren Till is. But, you know, look.
It's scary, mate. It's scary to think what I'm going to achieve in 9 years. Trust me.
Yeah, no. Listen, Darren, I well believe you. But I want to get your thoughts on the way you feel in the cage and fight night at 185 pounds. I know you haven't done it, but is it more like you going training and, you know, not having obviously to cut that weight and being at a prime sort of optimum Darren Till?
It's more like relaxation to the head that I don't have to worry so much about weight. You know, it won't be as a big weight cut. It'll be, a few less kilos to cut, which I think is a big weight off my mind. But as I say, mate, nothing set in stone yet. So, you know, we'll see where this year, at the end of this year, leads me.
Darren, you must have an idea, though, no? In your mind?
No. Not one, mate. I swear to God.
Okay.
I'm an undecided man. I'm a hard man to get hold of. I'm a very undecided man.
What's Colin said about that? Has Colin had any input into 185, 170?
No, Colin just doesn't say a lot. Maybe he's a man of few words. And he, right now, I think he just wants me to train and get better, mate. Really.
Michael Bisping, just before we let you go, said in an interview the other day, I believe, that he'd love to see you fight Robbie Lawler at 170 pounds next. What would your thoughts be on that potential fight?
That's a great fight, mate. I called Robbie out not so long ago, and he's a childhood hero. I grew up watching him, and you know that would be spectacular, mate. Really would.
All right, Darren, I do appreciate the time. I know you're a busy man today, but like, just one more for
no problem, mate.
One more for the fans and the people listening to the show. When are we going to expect you back in there?
100 million% before Christmas, mate. I'm ready to fight now, so 100% before Christmas.
But you're ready to fight at 185 pounds, right?
I don't know, mate. I really don't know. You're pushing. It's right, mate.
Darren Till, I always appreciate the time, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you back in there. I'll speak to you soon, my man.
No problem, mate. See you later.
Darren, nice one, man. I'll chat to you soon.
And what a pleasure it was for Niall to speak to Darren Till this week. Great stuff there, Niall. What were your key takeaways?
My key takeaways are that he's 125% never going to answer his phone first time around. I think Darren, man, and I think, you know, a lot of our listeners there will realise that, you know, the next option is 185. I think, you know, he said even there, I sort of maybe caught him out a little bit at the end.
Well,
I
on
said,
4 weeks notice,
four
he can't
weeks,
be.
Yeah, he's not getting to 170. It's a 3-month process for him. So, yeah, listen, 185 next, and I think the thing for Darren is, you know, I'm glad he's taking this little bit of time off, obviously, to heal up from... To grow that beard, get some new teeth. And that knockout was nasty, dude. But I think Darren's taking a little bit of time to reassess and get his head together.
Right. I agree with you.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I respect that. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing a lean fighting machine in Darren Till.
Well, it's 185 or 170 is still going to be pretty lean, right?
Yeah, let's be honest. Exactly. Like the guy probably is, 215 pounds walking around.
Nearly as big as myself.
And I think he's making some lifetime changes. But, you know, I sort of thought for a while that maybe you know, and he addressed it there. He did ask him the question about, you know, the lifestyle. Did the fame get to him a little bit? Did he deal with it in the right way? You know, he says, you know, that it was obviously a little bit tough, but he's just had to keep his circle a little bit smaller. And, you know, things like that, you know, he's 26 years of age as well. Like, guys, give him a break. He gets a lot of grief sometimes for a lad so young. And he even said it there. It's going to be scary what that guy can do in the next 5-6 years because he hasn't even hit his prime yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a look back at what happened at UFC Uruguay. Valentina Shevchenko outclasses Liz Carmouche. Liz Carmouche didn't really offer anything, to be honest. Great.
It was very straightforward. Listen, Valentina, we've talked about it, so good, so but technically
this is
strong,
the problem, right?
So hard. And we even said it last week, trying to get her to the ground or do anything with her, it's going to be very, very tough for Liz Carmouche.
But the problem is here, as far as I'm concerned, is there's never any storyline within that division. After she beats someone and it's straight on to, when's she going to fight Nunes again? And that fight's happened twice already. So that's difficult.
Like the next one there, and, you know, obviously Jess Guy defeated this lady. It probably is Caitlin Chookagian if they want to keep...
Did you see them both changing, exchanging dance moves?
No,
there?
Did they? That was
fantastic.
Probably quite cringe.
It was amazing.
But, you know, I'm not sure I want to see the Nunes fight now, so I'd probably prefer to see
Chookagian, yeah, definitely.
Her feet face Chookagian, and that's, for me, again, if it's Valentina all day long in that fight.
But it's like anyone that can get 3 wins in a row, basically, a flyweight, is going to fight the champion.
They should just do a super division with Nunes, Cyborg, if she's out.
Nah,
she's gone.
Over. No,
Shevchenko, throw Joanna up there as well, and just get rid of weight classes in women's mixed martial arts.
Jesus Christ.
I'm joking.
So Vicente Luque and Mike Perry had quite a fight, and Mike Perry's nose is in an awful way.
Man.
That was a good fight. This kind of highlighted to me how low key the audience were. Because there was like, this is mental. And
they're not getting engaged or involved in it.
No, yeah. Is my sound messed up on my TV or something? I was like, what's going on?
Well, sometimes the UFC do that as well. Their sound is poor sometimes. I guess I just
remember like those first Brazilian cards and, you know, with everyone being South American there, I was like, oh, this is going to be a similar kind of thing. And it just wasn't.
Well, I think it gets, you know, I don't know what was the attendance like. I'll have a look for it here now. The attendance was 9,225. It's not bad for... the, you know, an arena of that
wasn't
size.
UFC Dublin noise, and we only had the same amount.
It wasn't, but they didn't promote it. That's true. And let's be honest, the card, come on, mate. Yeah, a lot of guys we would be even very unfamiliar with on that card.
Let's just, about Luque and Perry, are you happy with the judges' scorecards? I had it for Luque. Yeah, I thought Luque took control of the fight in the second half of the fight that he owned.
Listen, what's Mike Perry ever going to be? Mike Perry's going to be a guy that gets in there, like Diego Sanchez. All greatest respect, Diego. You know, he's a guy that's going to go in there, put on a show for the fans. He's never going to win a world title.
Jesus.
Mike Perry, you know, a guy I worry for going down the line as well.
He's
so raw.
Takes too much shots. Like, I mean, his style is nearly dependent on being in those warlike situations.
Way too many. And like, even if you look at the Paul Felder fight, Paul had, you know, one hand broken in that fight when Paul lost him 170. And Paul still gave him a lot of damage with his other hand. So you're sort of going like, you know, Mike, just chill out and maybe put a bit more thought into your fighting style before you just go out so reckless. And that's what I always get worried for when I see Mike Perry. He's so fucking raw, man.
That nose is seriously
fucked up. Yeah, it was just, I was like, oh, man. When I saw it, I was like, shit. Like, look at it. It was smattered across his face like a piece of bloody mola. It was mola's like Play-Doh or whatever you call it. Just shocking, really. It was shocking to see that one. It was
yeah. Eduardo Garrigori got a decision win over Humberto.
I'm being very harsh today, am I? You're just
letting it all out there. Volkan Ozdemir finally gets back to winning ways, and I'd say that felt good, man, because he has had put up with a lot of shit over the last year with that trial that turned out to be complete shite, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
His whole visa situation being completely rolled off before his title fight. And he kind of went on them subsequent 2 losses afterwards. Of course, the Dominic Cruz fight was very close.
Reyes.
Dominic Reyes, yeah, he never fought Dominic Cruz. But
I'd watch.
But that's exactly the kind of win he wants. He wants to be shown that he has that stopping power still, because, you know, we wanted to see that again. That's what he was known for when he came in here first. Ilia Lativi is no joke. So I think that's a huge win for him. And hopefully we can see him carry that momentum into something. Because as we know, we need people in these divisions.
100% in that division. And, you know, Ealer as well, a guy, you know, it's a second straight loss in a row after, you know, I think he won 2 before that.
He was nearly knocking on the door of the title fight before that Corey Anderson fight.
You know, and where is the momentum? Where is this star going to come from?
Johnny Walker.
Well, that is it. Yeah. You know, Johnny is the hope at the moment that we all have.
Johnny Irishman.
We want to see him come over and really make a explosive challenge to get in the mix, because, you know, heavyweights, light heavyweights, we need these guys. We really, really do. And it's the UFC's fault to a certain extent as well. It really is. And I don't think they take enough responsibility at times for the way they market fighters, and again, as we talked about, Uruguay.
Yeah, look, Johnny Walker's brand new. He's won 3 fights, and now he's on a title shot already. Like, he's basically there. Yeah. Uzdemir was the same when he came in.
Exactly.
It's like there is no time to nurture talent anymore.
Yeah.
But Rodolfo Vieira is a jiu-jitsu guy's wet dream. Basically, he comes in against Oscar Pachota, a guy who I rate very highly. And really, as soon as the fight hit the ground,
boom.
And Pachota
up against
pretty,
the cage, and then it was.
Yeah, but Pachota's good on the ground, man. Yeah. He is fucking good. I've seen him in his other fights, so that's really promising stuff from Rodolfo. I can remember all the jiu-jitsu guys I spoke to before Rodolfo came across the UFC. They were like, he's the one, he's the next Maya. Like, you know, he's the next guy that could be like a Damian Maya, really utilizing basic jiu-jitsu skills to climb to the top of the division. And on that performance, you'd probably say it's...
And he's a big dude as well.
Oh, like, he's a house. He used to compete at heavyweight in jiu-jitsu.
Was he?
Yeah, Jesus. He was a monster. Like, so, very promising there from himself.
Cyril the Squirrel.
Yeah, well, Gilbert Burns got the decision win over Alexei Kinchenko. That's the first loss on Alexei's record. So, no mean feat there. Gilbert Burns making his 170 debut, as you pointed out last week, to be fair. Cyril Gann, my God. Not what I expected whatsoever, but that's probably the best thing you can say about it, because this lad can... Look, his striking, it wasn't one of his better striking performances. Usually he's really clinical, you know? But to do that to a guy who we thought was, if this hits the ground, Cyril's going to be in really big trouble. And he head-armed the shit out of him. So I think that's probably as good as a debut you can have, because we already knew about his hands.
Franny Ngannou's protege.
But once you... once you see that other side, the submission game, that adds a whole new spectrum to him. So, big fan of Cyril Gann, and we spoke to him. We'll be speaking to him later on. Great guy.
Can I ask a question? You know, is he one of those people we need? Is he one of those people that is going to go to the top of the division?
He definitely can, and I mean, a lot of people have been talking about this guy. Like, he was on my prospects list when he was 2-0. Like, he was just outrageous how good he was. He was a Muay Thai champion as well, and he's just huge weapon of a man. But I think it's very important as well for this French legalization situation. If they had an event there, you know, we already talked about Dukanois. We've lost Dukanois over there. To have two heavyweights like Gann and Ngannou possibly going over there to be on a card would be unbelievable. And
they might ban the sport after those.
But Guilherme Cruz got a great bit out of Fernand Lopez. We talk about it later on, of course, Coach Fernand Lopez of the MMA Factory. He suggested Gann is not the type of guy that's going to call someone out. His name is Bon Gaiman, which means good kid. He's like, he's not a trash talker at all. Which is, I think that's what it means anyway.
Oh, Jesus.
Bon
Garçon.
But he said Greg Hardy. Like, I mean, that would be insane. Putting Greg Hardy, Cyril Gann, a 4-0 in against... Greg Hardy.
Yeah, the UFC aren't going to do that.
Yeah, they'd kill Greg Hardy, I'd say, to be honest. Yeah. He was very complimentary. Now, you'll hear it in the interview later on, but I think that would go one way, and one way violently.
Definitely.
That's really all the European action that was on that card.
It was all right. Let's move on.
I just wanted to mention Alan Philpott's delicious knee to strikes KO on One Warrior Series. A lot of people were hoping that he would get the contract after that. I didn't really know how this works, so it's basically like the same kind of thing as Contender Series. They all fight, and then one person gets a contract in the end. The most impressive.
It's more of a league sort of system. They fight each other more than just the once and less contenders, because they want to pull you back in or whatever. But yeah, it seems to be the way it works. But
beautiful finish, Jesus Christ. And it was a competitive fight up until then. Just bing!
Left hook, and then
knee
was just, sometimes you just forget with the global rules that they're allowed to smack each other in the head.
Sometimes I don't know. I'm like, what the hell? Which one are we allowed to do? Look,
we're in a ring here. Yeah. what's going on here?
Fair boxing only.
There's a fucking kickboxing fight on. You're like, I don't know, man. What am I watching?
But huge win for Alan. I'm delighted to see
it. Did they have a million viewers on?
Several billion.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it was in the billions again. But that's two wins in a row now in Warrior Series. He obviously had that loss in his first fight, but two solid performances. Looking forward to seeing him in there again, and hopefully the next one will result in a contract, because we need to see Europeans like Alan on there. That's going to compel people to view that product in Europe. So Very good win for him, I must say. Will we get on with our second interview of the day, sir?
Do it.
We spoke to Cyril Gane after his fantastic submission win in his debut. And, of course, Coach Fernand Lopez, who gave us a great preview to this weekend's heavyweight title fight between Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic. Of course, Coach Fernand Lopez is the man who paved the way for Francis Ngannou on his first title ascent. Ngannou is training in Las Vegas now, but he's still very much part of the MMA Factory team. So I spoke to both of the guys about the team out there, and really, really great to speak to Coach Fernand Lopez. He's doing fantastic things in Paris. We'll be back to you in about 20 minutes. And now, as promised, we are joined by the great Coach Fernand Lopez, and one of the most talked about fighters coming off the back of his debut win at UFC Uruguay. It's Mr. Cyril Gane. Fernand, first of all, thank you so much for joining me.
A pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and what a win. And please tell Cyril, I said congratulations, a fantastic win.
Thank you very much.
Amazing. I just wanted to know, first of all, did Cyril think that it was going to take this long? I mean, it was very quick. Did he think he would get Pessoa out of there that quickly?
Est-ce que tu as pensé que ça allait se passer aussi vite que tu allais battre Pessoa aussi rapidement? Est-ce que tu as pensé que le combat allait aller aussi vite?
Non, comme je dis, comme d'habitude, j'ai jamais aucune prévision pour mes combats. C'est vraiment feeling. Donc aussi bien que ça pouvait se terminer tôt dans le premier round, aussi bien que ça pouvait aller au troisième round, j'en avais aucune idée.
Well, like you always said, you don't know what the outcome of the fight. Any fight that is doing, it's really for the go to the long term or finish the fight in the first second. So he didn't know, he didn't plan anything. He just go with the feeling that he had and what Pessoa will give him.
Yes, and what an amazing way to win his debut in the UFC, because of course, before this fight, all of the media guys like me were talking about his fantastic striking ability, his amazing Muay Thai style, and then he comes off with this fantastic submission against a guy who everybody thought would have an edge on him on the ground. He must be very happy with that, showing people a different side of his game.
Forcément, je suis content. Forcément, je suis content d'avoir prouvé que je pouvais être dangereux dans plusieurs domaines. C'est surtout ça, en fait. C'est un message que je pense à mes prochains adversaires.
Definitely, I'm happy. I'm happy because I proved to people that I can be dangerous in all the area. And I'm happy to have pulled out the submission in the first round.
Yes, of course. Is he disappointed that he didn't get a performance of the night bonus? I saw you speaking to my colleague Guilherme Cruz backstage, and you didn't know if he was going to get it yet. But is he disappointed that he didn't come away with an extra 50,000?
Non, c'est quelque chose à laquelle je me suis posé la question après mon combat. Après la réflexion, je me suis dit, pas une seule fois dans ma préparation, j'ai pensé à l'argent. Donc non, le principal, c'est de rentrer avec du vert.
Well, the main goal is to have the green, right? To have the victory. So he didn't thought about it before the preparation. He didn't thought about it after yesterday. But at the moment, I was laughing on that. Anyway, we have our teammate Veronica Macedo who had the bonus. So the Steelers 50K going to the MMA Factory.
Yes. Is she going to give Cyril half of it? Maybe not.
No, not that sure, but she can give some love, some hugs, you know. But 50K, I mean, each person need to do something in his family with that, so we respect that and no problem.
Brilliant. One of the things that got me very excited afterwards was when you were speaking to Guilherme backstage, and it was you, Fernand, it wasn't Cyril, which I should underline, but you suggested a fantastic fight, the Greg Hardy fight, and when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, this would be amazing, because you told me about Cyril, about what a good person he is, what a great family man he is, and then on the opposite side, you have Greg Hardy, a man who not a lot of people like. I feel like this fight would push Cyril's brand through the roof. Is this something that, I know you like it, Fernand, but has Cyril thought about it more since then? Is this something that would be a really good option for him?
I think, I mean, after all, when we finished the interview with your colleague, he asked me, I mean, he said, why not? Let's do it. If that happened, if he's free, why not? Because this is, and he precised that this is a good challenge for him. Because Greg Ali is not someone to count out. He's very good on the feet. He's brutal. He's good wrestler. He has the good conditioning. So I think that will be a good fight. And he thought that will also be a good fight. And he definitely want that to happen, like I suggest. But again, Bongama don't like to call people out. So I'm doing. I will have the bad role to call people out if we need. But this is not how he works.
Yes, I understand. But could you ask Cyril, like, I mean, does he feel, like, when I see Cyril fighting, I think he is something very special. And when I see the other guys Hardy has fought, I'm thinking they're nowhere near as good as Cyril. And I know Cyril's a good guy, and I'm not asking him to talk trash, but does he feel like if this fight happened, he would be the toughest fight of Hardy's career? Because I certainly feel that way.
Ok, il veut entendre de toi ce que tu penses sérieusement de ce combat en vue avec Greg Hardy. Est-ce que lui pense que quand il te voit combattre, t'es loin au-dessus de Greg Hardy techniquement. Greg Hardy, il est super connu, ça va t'amener au toit du monde et tout parce que c'est un mec connu et tout. Mais qu'est-ce que tu penses? Comment le combat se déroule? Qu'est-ce que tu en penses?
Qu'est-ce que je pense du combat ou
qu'est-ce que tu penses de ce qui va se passer dans le combat?
Qu'est-ce qui va se passer dans le combat? Encore une fois, j'arrive pas à prédire les choses, j'arrive jamais à prédire mes combats. Mais ce qui va se passer, c'est que je vais faire la même chose que d'habitude. Je vais toujours utiliser mes points forts, ça c'est certain. Et je pense que ça va donner un très gros combat. Je pense que ça va donner un très gros combat parce qu'on a quelqu'un d'en face aussi qui est très athlétique et qui a très faim et qui cogne fort, qui est brutal, comme tu dis. Donc forcément, ça va faire des étincelles.
Okay, I'm not good in prediction. What I can say is that for sure I will do what I know, what I like to do, which is pressure coming forward with my strength, which is striking. And then if the guy take me down, if he try to take me down, I will submit him. If he whatever happen, I don't know the outcome, but for sure that will be a great fight because it's not a joke and I'm not a joke.
Yes. And I was just wondering, and this will be the last question about Greg Hardy, I promise, but I was just wondering, does that give him more of a motivation when, you know, a guy like Hardy has history with domestic violence and, you know, with the law in America, does that appeal to him as a fight because of that? Like, does he like to maybe...
Okay, so, il reprécise la question en disant que est-ce que ça te donne plus de motivation de savoir que Greg Hardy aux États-Unis est connu comme quelqu'un de violent, quelqu'un que le public n'aime pas beaucoup, quelqu'un qui est un crash talk, et toi, non. De l'autre côté, tu es quelqu'un que le public aime parce que tu es
pas
un
du
bon
tout.
Gamin.
Moi, je prends pas du tout ça en compte. Je prends les qualités physiques, athlétiques et techniques de mon adversaire et pas tout ce qu'il y a autour.
Okay. He said, that do not give me any extra motivation because my goal is to take into account the skills, the ability, the physique, the sportship, the sport part, but not the private life, not the lifestyle. I'm here to do the sport and focus on my opponent with the skill that he have, not the lifestyle.
Right. I understand. And thank you so much for answering those questions. You know, one thing about Cyril as well, I don't think I've seen a guy enter the heavyweight division with this much hype in so long. And with such, like, you know, with only 4 professional fights, people are already talking about this guy fighting for a world title. I spoke to you before this fight, Fernand, and you were saying, like, you know, Cyril has the potential to be one of the great heavyweights, a guy who we're still talking about 10 years from now. Does Cyril understand that that's how you see him? How does he feel about that kind of expectation?
Ok, jamais à l'UFC, il n'y a personne qui n'est entré de manière aussi violente avec une bonne réputation comme toi. Est-ce que tu es conscient que les gens te voient comme un potentiel champion de très longtemps? Est-ce que tu es conscient que moi, ton entraîneur, je te vois avec ce potentiel? Et qu'est-ce que ça te fait? Est-ce que ça te met de la pression de savoir qu'on a de l'expectative sur toi de cette dimension?
Non, parce que moi aussi, j'en suis conscient.
He said, no, it's not surprise, it's not... He's not under pressure because himself is aware that he can be something great.
Well, and I'm thinking, right? So Fernand, you got Francis into a title situation in just 2 years. Does Cyril believe that he can get up to that title shot in that same amount of time? Because as we know, when you get a win in the heavyweight division, it's huge because there isn't the same talent pool at heavyweight than there is in the other division. So it gives you a huge push each time you win. Does he think he could be similar to Francis in he could get to that title shot within 2 years of his debut?
Il dit que j'ai amené Francis à la ceinture en moins de 2 ans. Est-ce que tu penses que tu feras 2 ans pour arriver à la ceinture, moins ou plus ou est-ce que
j'espère faire aussi bien. Okay. J'espère faire aussi bien.
I hope I will do that good, that he did, that Francis did.
And is he already, like, I mean, does he have an idea about this weekend's title fight? Will he be watching that closely? Does he have any feelings who could win there, Cormier or Stipe?
Ton pronostic sur Cormier Stipe.
Comme j'ai dit, Cormier a gagné le premier combat et si Stipe est assez intelligent et a étudié ses vidéos et s'il sera concentré pour son combat, il est possible qu'il gagne. Moi, je dirais Stipe.
He said already that he feel like Stipe didn't took the fight seriously the first time and if this time he watched the tape. And he gets focused, I think is Stipe who going to win the fight.
Wow. That's amazing. And I know that Cyril wants to fight in UFC Copenhagen. Is he confident that it is going to happen or is it too quick of a turnaround? Have you guys talked to the UFC about that yet?
Yeah, we talked to the UFC and it seems the fight card in Copenhagen is almost full. It's full. So they can be maybe a surprise, but we're quietly sure that there will not be a room in Copenhagen. So we're looking forward to have the quicker possible any fight in any place in anywhere.
You know,
he just want to be busy and keep fighting. Like if he can do 2 more fights before the end of the year, that would be awesome.
We would love to see him fighting in Europe over here. We would love that so much. You got to tell Cyril he needs to come over here and put on a show for us.
Il dit que les Européens aimeraient te voir combattre ici. C'est bien que tu combattes en Amérique latine aux États-Unis, mais que les Européens aimeraient te voir retourner ici combattre en Europe.
Ouais. Et moi aussi, j'aimerais beaucoup. J'aimerais beaucoup parce que pour le coup, il y aurait beaucoup plus de gens de ma famille, beaucoup plus d'amis, de coéquipiers qui pourraient éventuellement venir me voir et me supporter.
Ok. Il said that he would like to himself. He would like to have people around him, family, friends, people. So, yeah. That would be awesome.
Great. Fernand, do you mind if I ask you a few questions now? Is that okay? I've asked Cyril everything. I was wondering if I could pick your brain about the heavyweight situation, if that's okay.
Let's go.
Brilliant. First of all, how do you feel about this main event? Obviously, I know Francis is preparing in Vegas at the moment, but I know he's still very much a member of the team out there and stuff like that. I mean, do you watch these fights very closely, these heavyweight bouts, obviously?
Definitely, that's my job. I mean, people, this kid, they pay me so I can learn about the division, I can learn about the UFC, the politics, the fight, everything. So this is my duty to watch all the UFC event every time. So for sure. And
you think it will be different this time, Fernand?
Yeah, I think this time will be different. I think that could be different. I mean, this guy is very good on grappling, on wrestling, CP. He's very good on boxing. And I think if he's focused, the outcome could be different.
Right. Do you think it could go a better way for Francis? I mean, he must be looking at this fight and thinking, I could be getting the winner here. I mean, do you think it's better for him if Stipe wins or it's better if Cormier wins? Because I feel like the Stipe rematch is something that would be obvious if Stipe wins, whereas with Cormier, there's always John Jones and stuff hanging around. You don't know if Francis is going to be the immediate fight for Cormier, right?
Okay, I think if we take out the John Jones situation, Francis should be the one to jump for the belt right away. And I think no matter who you, got in the situation, no matter if it's Stipe or DC, Francis is going to win the fight anyway.
Yes, do you feel as though he's a very different fighter than we saw fight Stipe the first time? Because he certainly seems that way.
Definitely. He's completely different. He's ready to... I mean, I definitely think that this time he's going to have that belt.
Is it? Do you feel as though it took those losses, like a guy like Francis who was just going towards the title shot so quickly? Do you feel like he needed those losses to gain some more experience, just to allow him to feel that, so now he can go on this second run towards the title?
Well, I don't know if he needed that. Let's put that this way. I mean, I think I don't need my father to get a loss, right?
Mm.
But I definitely think that the father become mature, the father become good. If you look the history of the champion become good because they know already a loss. I mean, like, if you are like Israel Adesanya, you are very good, right? You just get there, get the belt, and then there's no problem. That's very good, but there's something missing. I mean, having a loss is a lot of learning. You never learn like you learn when you get a loss. Then you can think a little bit. So, I think that loss makes Francis completely different.
Do you think there's like, you know, they're looking at Francis now and how he's performed lately, and they're kind of going, well, like this is going to be very difficult all of a sudden, because it, like, just what he did to Dos Santos in the last fight. I mean, who would want to fight this guy at this stage, right? Like, I mean, he looks insane at the moment.
Definitely. Francis always look, but people they just tend to forget what someone did. You remember Francis pulled a huge submission against Anthony I think that was his second or third fight in the UFC, and people they was amazed about how he was brave in that submission, and then people tend to forget, and then a couple fights later there was like, okay, this guy don't know any clue what's going on on the ground. So, but Francis always look amazing, and when he's a good mindset, you know, if you take out the two losses that he have, that he wasn't there, he was in the good mindset, he's always dangerous anyway.
Yes. And as you were telling me before this fight, you feel as though you have a huge amount of talent at heavyweight there in your gym, don't you? Like, I mean, you were telling me Cyril has a lot of guys to prepare with. Do you feel as though the MMA Factory is going to be an even bigger name in the UFC in heavyweight fighting, you know, this time in 5 years or, you know, 2 years' time?
I think what's going on is that the MMA world is underrating a lot of European gyms. I think MMA Factory is one of the, it's not because of mine, because it's my gym, but it's one of the best gym in the world. Like, you know, the people they don't know how good and how smart are European coaching, because of the way to be graduate to become a coach in Europe is something huge. I mean, you really have to know a lot of things about the anatomy, the body, the physiology, the everything, you know. So the mindset is very huge about the coaching in Europe, and especially MMA Factory. We have in the heavyweight division in my gym around 10 guys that can be in the UFC, like all of them, like the Enoch Ifa, the guy that you saw in the corner of Cyril Gane. If you can just Google as the name of the guy, go to the Wikipedia, you will be amazed by the record of striking that he can put on the table. And this guy is starting the MMA, and he will be doing the first fight in September. Wow. You have guys like Slim, he was an Olympian in wrestling. We have so many great talent in my gym, like people with a 5-7 win streak that people they don't know yet. I'm just talking about the heavyweight that. It's amazing. I think in the next 5 years, the MMA Factory will finally get the
recognition.
The recognition that it deserves because of what we are doing, because of what we are shaving as a talent that we're pulling out every time in all the divisions. Like, you know, we were talking last time about Taylor Lapillus, who just...
Yes.
He had 2 belts in Germany, in the GMC, the best organization in Germany. He's the champion in the TKO in Canada. And this guy fought four times in the UFC, won three times, and lost only one time in Mexico against a Mexican guy, a tough guy. So we have so many great talent like that. You can see even in the girl side, like Ruslan Zoa. She went to the Olympics two times.
She was fighting in EFC, right?
And she was fighting in EFC. I mean, the fight that she pulled in the belt just for the title in UFC Bantamweight was elected the fight of the year in South Africa. So to tell you the level of the good guy that we have in Europe and especially in MMA Factory.
Brilliant. Thank you, Fernand. Thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and I can't wait to see your gym continue to go from strength to strength. And congratulations on two fantastic performances last weekend.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate what you are doing for this sport, my man.
No worries at all. And you take maybe a couple of days holidays before you go back to the gym, okay? You work too hard.
Thank you. I'm picking my daughter to tonight, and then we're going for 4 days vacation. That's all. That
beautiful.
That will be for a good day vacation.
Beautiful. And so thank you to you, and tell Cyril I said thank you very much as well. It's a pleasure for us to speak to you.
Yes, me too. Me too. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. All the best. Bye bye.
Bye bye, Peter.
Bye bye. Great to speak to Coach Fernand Lopez and Cyril Gane. A name that we'll be hearing a lot in the future, I believe. And, of course, great to get his take on Cormier v. Miocic this weekend. Huge, huge fight this. Did you see the ESPN E60 feature on Cormier?
I have not watched it yet.
I have seen it. I will not reveal how, but it's absolutely fantastic. Really, really good. I think it really sets up Cormier well for if there was a thing with Jones again. I feel like Jones was always the hero there, really, for the fans. You know, he was always the one that with the most support. But when you see the stuff Cormier has gone through in his life and has managed to forge his career for himself, it's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, and I've seen some of the stuff in the past. Obviously, you know, lost a daughter and he's gone through some serious trials and tribulations in his life. But I think just in terms of Jones, I think people have warmed to the shit talk of Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, you know, he needs those kind of big performances to underline his dominance. Yeah. And just maybe after the Thiago fight, it's not quite where it usually is because he's usually emphatic. Mm-hmm. And maybe it isn't. But certainly after watching that fight, the feature, I was like, Jesus Christ, man, this fella's unbelievable. Great work from Ariel Helwani and the ESPN team. But yeah, I feel like this is an interesting one. Daniel's going back to where he suffered that knockout loss to John Jones in their second fight, and he's taking on Miocic, a guy who he obviously beat in the first round of their fight. But, you know, I always give you shit about it, but you have a point about that eye poke. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I hate admitting this, but I went back and watched it, and it's hard not to think that it didn't affect the fight. You know, whether it was an intentional one or not, I honestly don't know. I think if you slow people down and you see them doing that poke motion, it always looks really bad. You know, I certainly don't think it was bad to say Ponzinibbio versus Nelson, but I do understand where you're coming from in terms of it did change the fight. Like, it had an impact on the fight. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, no, no, yeah. You know, I've been a big advocate of that, and
I
think it was something that should have been reported more and it wasn't. Maybe because people are so warm in terms.
Well, it's hard to steal the limelight off a double champion, you know?
I know, yeah, but, you know, my sort of opposite of this is, you know, Stipe Miocic, the greatest heavyweight of all time. I think even, you know, the amount of defenses he had, he's broken the record for
with
doing
three.
That. Took him 18 months or whatever to get a, you know, a rematch. Should have been an immediate rematch for me. There was talk of Daniel Cormier and Brock Lesnar at one point, I believe, and when Brock came into the octagon, who wants to see that shit?
Would have watched it.
No, I wouldn't have. Well, I would have. Of course I would have. Like,
you always say that. Yeah, you always immediately go, I would have watched it. Attractive. Yeah, I probably would have watched
trying
it.
Trying to be the big bad wolf. But it had a definite impact in the fight. But, you know, I remember watching that fight and going, and Cormier, if you look at Cormier, the way he strikes and he puts out his jab when he's punching, he always seems to have his hands out. And I think the referees really need to watch it in this fight. Coming up, because clearly it obviously, you know, disturbed Cormier or Miocic's vision, and that was the shot eventually which caught him. What was it? Was an overhand right or a cross which knocked him? Whatever it was.
An uppercut, no?
Yeah, but it impaled his vision definitely.
Impaled?
Yeah, whatever.
Impaired
his vision. Jesus Christ. His vision. But, you know, it's a really, really good fight, but I just you know, I do have that feeling that Miocic is going to get his title back on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Fernand said as well. Yeah. Like, he kind of said, like, I think people are just focusing way too much on the first fight. I think that, you know, Stipe is great boxing, and he has enough grappling to stay safe against Cormier, you know. And, yeah, I mean, it's taken on a life of its own, really, this week. I wasn't really, I don't know why, I just was like, Cormier is going to do it, and then kind of saw your eye poke tweet again for the 85th time, and I was like, you know what? Motherfucker has a point here. But do you think it's going to, like, I mean, are you favouring Stipe a large amount going into this
fight? Yeah.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, I am.
Well,
I think he's totally underrated wrestling. He's really, really good stand-up. We saw how well he was. He dealt with Francis Ngannou, some unbelievable footwork to avoid Ngannou's onslaught in that first round of that fight. We've seen his wrestling, obviously, the years against, you know, what fights are we looking at here? The Mark Hunt fight, I think, was the really sort of one where he just took Mark down time again. It was unbelievable. So many tools, so hungry, I believe, after losing that title as well. He sat out, man, and waited for this. He made a point, and I respect him for that, saying, I deserve an immediate rematch. I'm the most, you know, I've defended a UFC heavyweight title more than anyone else in the history of the UFC's heavyweight division. And, you know, I think he had a very valid point. And he didn't cry about the eye pokes, which he could have done. And, you know, he does seem to respect Daniel Cormier coming here. But the thing that fucks me off with Miocic in terms of the perception we're talking about and the pictures that are painted, he doesn't get enough credit for what he did. He went into Brazil in front of a stadium, 60,000 people.
That was mad,
and beat Fabrizio Verdum. To win that heavyweight title, and then, you know, put on, I was at the fight in Cleveland, in his hometown, against Alistair Overeem, you know, probably the second loudest crowd I've ever heard in UFC after Dublin. And, you know, JDS then and Francis Ngannou, and obviously lost to Cormier. It's
great run, unbelievable run.
Four really good wins in such a hard division.
But I will say, like, all of these fighters, and the same applies to all of them, you have to toot your own horn, you have to get out there, yes. You have to control the narrative, and that's something that Stipe's never done.
Yeah, he's like pulling teeth. We've both interviewed him a number of times.
I usually end up interviewing about how much he doesn't like doing interviews. That's usually every interview I do with him.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think he's warmed to it a little bit more in the past. He's a lovely guy.
He really is
a lovely guy, but he's just, once a camera comes on, he's just one of those people. He's it puts him out a little bit. I can totally understand that, you know. But yeah, no, I do agree with that. But
I have to say, I'm favouring Cormier. Like, I know you're favouring Stipe. I still favour Cormier, and I think the fact that he's been active, the fact that he's gone out there and fought, I think that's just as much as a feather in his cap as Stipe sitting out, to be honest.
Yeah, but he wouldn't fight Miocic. He said Miocic had to get a fight, and I don't really understand the point of that. Saying that, like, you know, what, over a year later.
Well, he knocked him out in the first round.
I know, yeah.
Do an immediate rematch, like, why?
To poke his eye out, but
but it's not like this hasn't happened to Daniel Cormier in his career. Like, he's fought John Jones. John Jones is the biggest culprit of this of all time. Without a doubt, he's poked more people in the eyes than anyone probably in the UFC consistently.
Listen, I think it's a really, really good fight. It's going to be a very close fight, but I do fancy Miocic to get a knockout in this. I think, you know, we talk about Cormier's wrestling. You've a guy in Stipe Miocic there, you know, a really decorated, good wrestler as well that doesn't get the kudos that he does. It probably should get a little bit more respect for that, but I believe this is going to stay on the feet, and I think Miocic is better on the feet generally.
Right, right. Now, there's a pretty big co-main event on this card. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, Nate Diaz.
Who's he?
I don't really know myself. But
I got locked in the toilet having a drink with him once later.
That's your experience.
Story ever.
But Nate Diaz, it kind of feels like the Johnson fight again, where it was kind of nothing and now it's suddenly become massive on fight week, which he just has this way of doing it. That Brett interview, Brett Okamoto on ESPN, has really teed this up very nicely. There's a lot of different storylines going on. His eyes seem to be very much on Khabib Nurmagomedov. I know this fight's at 170 against Anthony Pettis, but this fight itself has taken on legs as well, because they've gone back and they're kind of showing all Nate Diaz talking about Pettis back in the day. Pettis had done that interview with Helwani.
They had shit for years, mate.
Where he went on Helwani and he kind of said, this one's personal. It's never been personal before, but this one is. I think we're setting ourselves up for a classic fight here, but I am a bit disappointed that's the three rounds.
Yeah, man, it's like, this is
like,
again,
if this doesn't get a finish in those first 15 minutes, people are going to be screaming about it.
I watched back a couple of fights today, of fights that are actually coming up. I watched Paul Felder and Edson Barbosa, and I watched Anthony Pettis and Holloway, I believe it was, at 45. And the thing, you know, you sort of take from, Jesus Christ, the thing you take from Anthony Pettis's career and the resurgence over the last number of fights is, and I know he lost that Tony Ferguson fight, but God, he put in a bloody good display, and Duke obviously had to stop it in the corner. But there's been a real resurgence, I think, ever since the Michael Chiesa fight, over his last three fights. Went up, obviously, his last fight to 170. Looked amazing against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And you have to feel as though Nate Diaz, the 3 years out, man, and I am a big believer in this, ring rust is a, you know, it's a long, long time to be out. I know he's been fit. I know he's been active, you know, doing jiu-jitsu tournaments and training with Ron Gracie. I believe he's been working a huge amount with ahead of this fight. But it's just not the same as getting in there. And this is going to be a major issue. Anthony Pettis has been very, very active in the last year. And I think it's going to be a big, big problem for Nate Diaz on fight night. I really do.
Yeah, but
I have worries here for Nate. And, you know, I would love to see that McGregor fight happen again down the line in the future. I know we're a long, long way from that, whatever we want to talk. I'd love to see the winner of this fight McGregor. But, you know,
I don't think it's as easy as that.
Does Nate really, you know, we talk about the 3 years out, and I know the UFC haven't promoted him right. That's what he said, why he didn't want to get back in there. But is that the major underlying factor here, why he hasn't been back in there? That's what you have to ask yourself, I think.
What do you mean?
You know, the Poirier fight fell out. I know Dustin, you know, sort of pulled out of that from what Nate was saying and from what we believe. But, you know, there was other opportunities to get back in there. Is the desire to be in the cage anymore?
Well, I mean, I think he went through all that stuff with Brett there fairly quickly. I think he felt he was being used.
Yeah, mistreated. But do we believe that straight?
Oh, yeah.
Face value. Yeah. Oh, no, I thoroughly believe he was used as a pawn, and he's always felt that way.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, but you know, taking the 3 years out, is the hunger there? Is the desire going to be there? I don't know.
It seems that way. Like, I mean, I definitely think he's fired up. Like, I mean, he doesn't have to do these interviews. That's not like Nate Diaz. Like, I mean, and you can tell. He's trying to be cool, but as soon as he starts talking about this, you can see the fire inside of him. Yeah, 3 years out is huge, though. Of course, like, what way is he looking? How is he moving? But the Diaz brothers, like, even when Nate...
He looks old, though.
Yeah, well, so does every fighter.
I couldn't believe how, when I saw that interview, how haggard he got.
Jesus. No, but, like, I don't think for a second that this fella stopped training, that his body's got out of shape, that anything like that.
I'm not saying
like,
that, yeah.
No, like, that's one thing that I'm pretty sure of. Even if Nick came back now, who seems to just be partying 24-7, I'd be like, oh, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back and he was somehow fit, because they're natural athletes. They've been chewing themselves up their whole lives. But I feel like he is a huge player in this card. Like, I mean, he is... With everything else that's going on, we're going to talk about the rest of the card soon. Nate Diaz
is the
star of the show here, without a doubt about it.
He is the eyes, but I just like the momentum Pettis is on. I think he's going to take great, great belief and confidence from that Stephen Thompson fight. That was a superlative display from
it was
Andy
a
Pettis
superlative
in
display
fight.
In terms of the finish, but he was chasing the fight up until that, I thought.
Was he? Not particularly. He was only a round gone.
I know, but
feeling out processing
the
first. The
finish was fantastic, but
yeah, he took a few smacks, yeah.
But it was a different kind of fight from him. Like, I think it's gonna be a great, great fight. I think it's gonna deliver well.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have, you know, and yeah, let's go back. Sorry, reverse back to the original point that you made. It's not five rounds. It's a travesty a fight like this isn't five rounds. This is, you know, when you ideally sort of think of this fight, you think of two guys standing there in the cage, you know, battered and bloodied at the end of the fight, having given 110%. And we probably will see that over three rounds. But, you know, we're going to be a guarantee you going on Saturday night here. Shit, man. Why didn't we get another two rounds of that?
I think it's like it's always the case. Yeah,
they need to change it.
But they have to pay these guys if they're on a fight in five rounds. It's a different camp completely, you know. Yeah,
that's true.
Interesting as well. Duke Rufus, your friend, speaking about Anthony Pettis, he thinks he's going to win by submission. That would be wild.
That will be wild.
And he said the last time he predicted that was when Pettis submitted Ben Henderson, was it? Did he say or something like that?
To win the title.
Yeah, and he said that's the last time he ever predicted something like that. So
yeah, he normally, like, known Duke, he doesn't go out and throw predictions out here and there, so he must be wildly confident that Anthony's...
Wildly would be the word. Like, you're going to submit Nate Diaz.
I just said that, yeah, wildly confident that that's going to happen. But listen, 3 years out, you know... Again, you have to look at that, and maybe that's in Duke's thought process. I'll probably throw a text to Duke later on tonight and see what the crack is and see what his predictions are for that
fight. Get your Ireland back, jersey back off, will you?
No, you know he does. He's Greek Irish, or his family heritage. He's very. He'll obviously have a Celtic top on and stuff like that as well. He's a mad flair as El Duke. But listen, I can't wait for it. I'm totally. That's the fight I'm looking for. Man, I've been looking for this fight all summer.
You're
going
right, just so far, so I can keep registered this. You're going Stipe and Pettis.
I think so. Yeah, I think I'm
going. I'm going on the opposite side of that. I'm going Diaz and Cormier.
Oh, there's fucking war here.
Let's have a look at the tiebreaker then. Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa.
Jesus.
Interesting here with everything that's gone on. Yeah. 13 months away for Paulo Costa. Yoel Romero taking lads to court, winning. It's a huge fight. It's nearly being minimized slightly by the two huge main and co-mains, but that is one hell of a fight. What do you think when you look at it on paper? I simply can't look past Yoel Romero's wrestling. Like, I just, like, this guy will not be able to live with this man on top of him. Like,
yeah, but like, you look at Paulo Costa, what we've seen from
him. And that's the thing as well. Sometimes Romero doesn't wrestle at all, and he just stands there in front of him. And I'm like, don't stand in front of that guy. Whatever you do, don't stand in front of him. My God.
We saw the whole Rockhold scenario as well. When like, that was...
explodes into action, and it's over quickly.
We were like, that was just, Jesus, when the blood started squirting out, I was like, oh man, no, what's happening here? But listen to me. I think Paulo Costa, from what I've seen, I know he's been away for a while, but man, we were so excited about this guy. And I think maybe, you know, we look at the Whittaker fight, you put some hands on Romero, and I know he's obviously a very, very tough guy, and, you know, they were both decision victories for Whittaker, but Paulo Costa's maybe a little bit of more of a power puncher than Robert Whittaker's,
I think I agree with you. One thing I find mad about Yoel is he literally just takes rounds off and then explodes into action for like 10 seconds and win a round.
On your camera.
Went around because he lettered someone, like, and he was like, oh,
But he's known to take a round off as well at time to time. And
known to sit on the stool and take a round.
But like, I didn't understand that in the Whittaker fight. I did think he took one of the rounds off. I think it was the fourth or the last one. There was a lot of debate. Whatever it was, anyway. But you look at Costa here, man, and what we see. Who did he fight last? Uriah Hall was what I think it was. Hang on, I'm just going to check here now. Uriah Hall, Johnny Hendricks, Onwuale Bangbose, and Garrett McClellan.
What
UFC.
About that pronunciation? Just straight... You got Bambose beautifully there, I must say.
Oh, there you go.
None of those fighters are anywhere near
the level of fighters Romero. Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And, you know, that could be the decisive factor here. But if you look at his fucking record, man. TKO, blah, 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 blah. It's just like, it's a submission thrown in there. TKO, punch. Man, the guy has not gone outside two rounds in his career. I would expect this one to go a little bit further, but... Yeah, listen, you have to figure in the wrestling. Maybe you are right. I think that's a fantastic dynamic to this fight that we have that debate there.
We're like, what's going on?
It's just too hard to work out. You know, is the power going to be too much for Romero? Is Romero's wrestling going to be too much? Okay, you know what I'm going to do? Because I know you're going to go with Romero. Fuck it, I'll go with Costa.
Woohoo!
Third round TKO.
Oh, lads. That's going to be good cracking fight night.
It's going to be one of those ones where I'd probably 3-0 to Petey.
Oh, I don't know about that. They're all very close fights. I can't wait to see Sadiq Youssef against Gabriel Benitez. I love that guy. I think he's brilliant. You know, that could be a very big fight for him in terms of look at the card he's on. Huge spotlight there. He's the only 145er on that main card. Him and obviously Gabriel. Yeah. But I think that's huge for him. Also think Ian Heinisch has a chance to do some amazing
really
against
fighter.
Derek Brunson. He's really exploded into the scene. He has a fantastic story. You know, he's been arrested in Spain, etc. What a run he's been on.
Fabulous. And that's a good fight, Heinisch and Brunson, really is. Yeah. It's a good fight. And we love, I think, further down the card, obviously someone who's a lot of hype sort of behind him coming into this was Corey Sandhagen. after that victory over John Lineker. Lineker was obviously subsequently released after last fight, which caused a lot of controversy against Rafael Usman. Said that's an absolute cracking fight. Rafael obviously coming off that loss to Marlon Moraes. So that's, man, that's an absolute banger as well of a fight. So
can I let my complaint out here?
Yeah, go on.
No Europeans.
There's not one. I think did we not touch on that last week that we said there was no Europeans?
I know, but it's a joke. I need to underline that again.
That is a bit of a piss take, isn't it?
It's a hilarious piss take. Who will we take on as an Irishman for the week?
Jesus, I don't know.
Who's going to get it?
Who's going to get it?
Who's going to get honorary citizenship for this weekend?
Pettis looks Irish.
No. Well, I mean, he has Duke wearing the jersey.
That's
true.
That is probably the nearest link we have.
Nate Diaz fought an Irish man.
That is true. We skip it.
Yeah. No Irish representative.
Okay, right.
This
we'll go. Kung Ho Kang.
What about Casey Kenny? That sounds Irish.
It does sound Irish, doesn't
it? That Casey, I don't know much about Casey, but I don't fancy his chances against Manny Bermudez, if I'm going to be perfectly honest.
Manny Bermudez has been a bloody killer. That's a fight and a person you should probably look out for as well if you're going to watch that fight. He's a killer.
No Irish person this week, so. But how was your wedding this week anyway? Who got married?
My mate's sister.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, and it was great. Really, you know, lovely day on Friday and got very, very drunk and obnoxious. No. I woke up on a couch.
Someone must have spiked you. That's not like you.
Nah. I tell you, it's a wine.
Get the guard on that now.
I said to you when I went down on Friday, I said, I'm going to stick to the Guinness. There's no way. And of course, fucking wine comes to the table. Started necking it.
I never really played with the wine.
I did, and I paid for it. I was absolutely dying on Saturday in work.
It's tough.
Not nice.
We got...
How was yours?
Yeah, it was great. My good friend, my best mate Steve's brother got married, so we were down for the whole day, the whole kit and caboodle. I haven't danced at a wedding in a long time, but my God.
God, I was just about to tell you that.
I was on the dance floor. They had to scrape me off the fucking dance floor about 5 a.m. so I could go home.
Those videos of me dancing at the wedding I was at a few weeks beforehand are going around.
Oh, are they?
And they were saying, oh, I was doing the floss and all this shit. Like, I have it here. I got sent one literally on Friday. I'll have
we'll
to
wait
show
till they
it,
go
you know?
Off and we can see it then. But,
oh, it was bad.
Yeah, great times had by all. You know, Reggie is nearly 2 years old now, Jonah. It's one Fuck week off. From Reggie's birthday today.
What?
Yeah.
What you got him?
I'll just get him a fillet steak, as always.
There's Niall Flossin.
It's visual. It's he's very vibrant, I'll tell you that much. Have you switched into a t-shirt there underneath the suit jacket?
Yeah.
Is that what you do? Would you bring a change of clothes for that kind of thing?
No, I was just obnoxiously drunk.
You puked all over your shirt,
did you? No, not at all. I went for a nap for an hour and then got back up, apparently.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I don't remember. Apparently, I was dancing until 6 a.m.
That's not a nap. That's a blackout.
more than likely, yeah. not gonna lie.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much all we have for you this week, lads. We've got other things to do tonight.
Tell you, we've a few big cards coming up in the next few weeks as well. So
a few big episodes.
And like, you know, we've Khabib Poirier in what, 3 weeks' time, and we've Jessica Andrade and Zhang coming up, which will, I think, be a great fight.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that one a lot.
Yeah, Zhang looks like a bloody absolute killer.
And you'd have to imagine then the winner of Waterson and Jan Jacek will take on the winner of whoever leaves there with the title. I think it's a bit early for Zhang, but I don't think it's going to be her last title shot. That's what I'll say about that.
Yeah.
But can't wait for the fights this weekend. I'm genuinely fired up to watch them.
100%. Co-main and main. Unbelievable. And obviously Romero and Costa as well, just, you know, fabulous fights. And I think that's what, you know, we do complain at times about the oversaturation of UFC in the world, especially the amount of cards they put on. But, you know, this one this weekend, we can't be complaining because it's these are the fights I think you relish, you know, viewing as...
Well, it's going to be one of the ones you look back at the end of the year and go, that fight happened this year. That was
exactly,
crazy.
Exactly.
And it's three fights. And just want to thank you all again for the reviews you're leaving on MMA Fight on iTunes. Thank you very, very much. We love you all very much. Tell your friends. Tell your ma. Tell everybody. We love yous loads. Here's a big kiss from me. Give them one, Noel.
Good luck.
Love yous. Talk to you soon. See yous next week. Be safe. Be vigilant.